Good afternoon. It's Saturday, February the 9th, in the heat of primary elections across the nation. This is Michelle Steinberg, counterintelligence desk editor of the Executive Intelligence Review, bringing you the LaRouche Show, where we discuss the ideas, initiatives, and insight of Lyndon LaRouche, the American political economist and chairman of the LaRouche Political Action Committee. This Saturday, February 9th, 2008, is just a few days after one of the really crucial events of this election, which was the narrowing of the field of presidential candidates after so-called Super Tuesday. What was super about it? Well, the markets continue to crash around the world, which is not a statistic to hold your breath by, because it's largely manipulated by plunge protection teams and so forth. But nonetheless, it is an indication of the panic, of the fear, of the fact that all around the world, the financial system is gone. But Mr. LaRouche had a more important message to deliver this week, especially on Thursday after Mitt Romney walked out of the presidential election, leaving the field much more narrow. But Mr. LaRouche wrote a statement, which is now available on the website, www.larouchepac.com. It's called Mitt Romney Walks Out. And it is a message that every American, every citizen of every nation has to understand, because the people who are elected in the United States, the next president of the United States, is really going to determine what happens in the world for perhaps the next two generations. Lyndon LaRouche is a Democrat. He heads a policy think tank political action committee, the LaRouche PAC. And here today, we're going to discuss his initiative for a new financial system around the world, a two-tier credit system, and the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. My guests are really tremendous group of people. From the LaRouche Youth Movement out in Seattle, Washington, I have Spencer Cross. From Leesburg, Virginia, right next to Washington, D.C., Jeffrey Steinberg, member of the editorial board of Executive Intelligence Review, and from Houston, Texas, Harley Schlanger, Western State spokesman for LaRouche and the Political Action Committee. And let me go right to what LaRouche said about the election. Ladies and gentlemen, these are my words, not Lyndon's, but the announcement, first of all, you have to know is all of the candidates that you see on the stage right now are not the candidates that are being planned to be imposed on the United States. What is in store by the financier oligarchy, represented on the American stage by Felix Roatan, the Lazard Frere operative now with Lehman Brothers, who wrecked New York City through brutal Nazi-like austerity back in the 1970s, and who is a bosom buddy with George P. Shultz. The two of them are the people who have mapped out an imperial private army, a revolution in military affairs, to deploy under the American flag hordes of killer soldiers with no allegiance to any nation, trained on monstrous video games. This is called privatizing warfare. And Roatan, Shultz, and a few others are also behind the fascist policies of Governor Arnie Schwarzenegger of California. They have a president in mind. His name is Michael Bloomberg, or Benito Bloomberg. He is the mayor of New York City. He is the $11 billion man who reigns today in New York, destroying education, imposing austerity, and has a corporatist, fascist policy for New York and for the country. Through a series of shock traumas, LaRouche says, the candidates before your eyes today are going to be eliminated. Obama, London has a massive dossier against him, including at the center of it, his connections to a man who is in jail right now, a millionaire, a big backer of Obama over the years by the name of Antoine Rezko. That dossier will come pounding down on Barack Obama at the pleasure of the London and Wall Street oligarchs. He will be finished. That would leave Senator Clinton as the remaining candidate for the Democratic Party's nomination. But she, too, is in the sight of the oligarchy's dirty tricks, who knows what, to destroy her candidacy. You already see signs of that. The Republicans, McCain, probably for health reasons, can't carry an election campaign. But that's hardly the point. The point is, no matter who the series of candidates were at this point, this fascist oligarchy has a Benito Mussolini-type plan for the United States. And the biggest danger is the delusion of Americans that it can't happen here. And rather than go through the dossier of what Bloomberg is up to and his soulmate, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is up to, I'm going to tell you one thing about the great Mayor Michael Bloomberg and then ask Spencer Cross to tell you it can happen here, and we've known that since the 1930s. So Mayor Bloomberg gave a speech in September 2007 in Blackpool, England, where he was speaking to the Conservative Party annual conference. And there he said to these Brits, "We'll forgive, if you forgive us for 1776, we'll forgive you for 1812. And it has been pointed out that if George Washington were president of the United States, Michael Bloomberg would be tried and hanged for treason. He made those statements after he had talked about running for president of the United States. So it can happen here. And Spencer, there were some insights from a well-known author from the early part of last century, who did tell us it can happen here, and you've done some research on that. So can you go through that?
Yeah, sure. There was a very interesting group of American patriots who were mostly authors in the 1930s, and they were well-versed in the attempted plot to assassinate and overthrow President Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s. Different groups of international finance, mostly from London. And LaRouche Pack has put out the full documentation of that story. You can find it on the LaRouche Pub PUB website. And one of Sinclair Lewis's best friends was a man named George Seldes, an American, who was a reporter for the Chicago Tribune in Rome and watched the whole uprising of fascism. He watched the whole development of it. He knew who Mussolini was, and actually had interviewed him several times. So I'd met the man. Yeah. and had signed, you know, during one of their interviews, Mussolini would, as he was already dictator at that point, would sort of throw out different titles of Nietzsche's books to see if Seldes would pick up on them. Because he's very happy that he was well read on Nietzsche and Schopenhauer and Sorel and all the top existentialists. Anyway, so Seldes comes back to the United States and is a next-door neighbor with Sinclair Lewis and gives him the whole story, the whole picture of how, what happened with the population, normally, you know, the nation of Verdi turning into a nation of just complete destruction, complete shutdown of industry. And Sinclair Lewis writes a very, like, having now looked back at the book, having read the history of Mussolini, you see that it's very clear what Sinclair Lewis uses in his book to show how a population, and he puts it in an American setting, of course, with a presidential election, how a population can be utterly duped, just hoodwinked left and right. The press plays upon every sympathy to run a real fascist dictator into the United States, and then very quickly shuts down all sort of free speech, you know, political voice, and just puts any sort of opposition figures in internment camps and shuts down all industry for the corporate model, privatizing everything to put everything into running as a business and making sure the general welfare is just unheard of. So we're going to be, you know, EIR is doing some, is going to be putting out some of this historical background for people.
Well, say a little bit more about Sinclair Lewis. When did he write the book? And if I'm not wrong, it's actually called It Can Happen Here. And it came out when the country was, the world was already in the hands of Nazis and fascists all over the place. Is that right?
Right. It came out in 1935, when Franklin Roosevelt was already U.S. president. And it was playing off a, it's called It Can't Happen Here, but it's playing off that very phrase that had become very popular in the United States, that they, Americans had seen the rise of Mussolini and fascism and Hitler in Germany, and they saw certain, you know, obvious problems with what they were doing, but they said, well, you know, it can't happen here. We're the United States. We're never going to go that route. So, and he shows in depth how the population is just duped left and right. They take every word of this person who, in the midst of an economic crisis, right, because this is Franklin Roosevelt's time when Sinclair Lewis is writing this, comes out with what seems like a clear solution, right? I'm gonna build this. I'm gonna regulate the banks. I'm gonna defend the common man instead of these banking types.
Now Sinclair Lewis, in a literary way, he did what Lyndon LaRouche does all the time, which gets under people's skin. He had something to say about fundamentalist preachers and that too. You want to say anything about that?
Oh, sure. It was a pretty popular movie in the 60s called Elmer Gantry, based on Sinclair Lewis's book of the same name, of that sort of traditional hypocritical preacher, who I forget the exact saying, but they... I think the saying is the preacher makes more souls in the bushes outside of the tent than souls are saved inside.
Well, we've heard a few reverends like that over the years. There have been a few exposés in hotel rooms and motel rooms and so forth.
Right.
So let's come back to this a little bit later. So this idea that the Americans think it can't happen here because it didn't happen here. Because a bunch of patriots, as Spencer mentioned, stepped in and prevented the assassination of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, but people still have that delusion. I'm going to turn to Jeff Steinberg, who can tell us what this Bloomberg option, Michael Bloomberg option. I was out organizing here in Virginia today, and most people that I talked to really don't know who he is. They've seen the name and they think it's a department store. I mean, they really have no idea. So what is this Bloomberg option and how could it work?
Well, first of all, let's pick up on the theme that Spencer was just developing, because it's of great relevance to why this Bloomberg factor is such a focus of attention of Lyndon LaRouche and our entire movement at this point. From the standpoint of the enemies of the United States, the financial oligarchy, primarily centered out of the City of London, but with far too many loyal allies and assets on Wall Street here in the United States. The worst experience since the American Revolution and the presidency of Abraham Lincoln was the election of 1932 and the follow-on events during the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. As Spencer indicated, there were plans underway. There were coup plots against Roosevelt, assassination plots and the like. The intention of Wall Street and London was to impose a fascist government in the United States back then parallel to what they had already achieved in Italy in the 1920s with Mussolini, and in Hitler with the election and then the seizure of power with the Reichstag fire in February of 1933 on the eve of Roosevelt's inauguration. The Roosevelt presidency was their worst nightmare, both in terms of the mobilization of the American people, the rebuilding of our economy, the restructuring of the banking system, and the buildup for what became the greatest mobilization of human and physical resources in the history of the world, namely the American mobilization to defeat fascism and Nazism in World War II. Roosevelt's intention was to follow the war by a coordinated policy in partnership with the Soviet Union, China, and others to assure that the post-war world was a world of sovereign nation states and not a world of colonial empires. And with Roosevelt's death in April of 1945, that dream was stillborn, and still to this day, we exist in a world in which far too much financial and actual physical power resides in the hands of colonialists. Now, to give you an indication of just how sensitive the oligarchy is to these kinds of potential revivals of American traditional constitutional values, in the early 1960s, with the election of John F. Kennedy as President of the United States, the City of London oligarchy became overwhelmed with concern that Kennedy was going to link up with certain forces in Europe. De Gaulle in France, Adenauer in Germany, even Harold Macmillan in England. And in the span of just a few short months, between the spring and the fall of 1963, one after another government of this transatlantic alliance collapsed. Kennedy was assassinated. Months earlier, the overthrow of the Adenauer government in Germany, in West Germany, had been orchestrated. The first assassination attempt against Charles de Gaulle occurred in 1962. And so back then, in the 1960s, during the period when the baby boomer generation was coming of age, the traumatic shock of these developments, particularly the John F. Kennedy assassination, drove an entire generation into a state of deep demoralization and fear to where they became prone to irrational ideas that they would have never accepted before.
Jeff, now, are you saying now that we're living in the time period of what we might have seen in the movies of the Day of the Jackal? Is that basically, and why?
The situation that we're in today is far worse, far more dangerous, and represents the greatest financial crisis in modern history. Probably the last time that extended European civilization went through the disasters of the scale that we're living through right now was in the 14th century with the collapse of the Lombard banking system, which plunged Europe into a dark age that lasted for a century and resulted in the deaths of half the population of Europe. That's the situation we're in. And under those circumstances, this financial oligarchy has determined to make sure that no candidate is elected as President of the United States who has even an inkling of an FDR American system impulse in their bones. And so, yes, we're living through a period in which the Day of the Jackal is the perfect image to think about. So now, how does that translate into the presidential elections? As Mr. LaRouche wrote in his memo, Mitt Romney Walks Out, which is a moment of assessment following Super Tuesday. You've got a number of key things that have happened. At this point, it would appear that John McCain has more or less locked up the Republican nomination for president. But McCain is an old man in poor health, and the strains of a presidential campaign that is going to run from February through to November could very well prove fatal. So the idea of McCain actually surviving into the presidency and lasting very long in office is minimal. It was noteworthy that the day of the Super Tuesday primaries, the British Fabian Press, the London Guardian, the London Independent, the next day the Daily Telegraph, all came out with major stories noting that Barack Obama is vulnerable in the extreme to the scandal that is unfolding against one of his biggest financial backers, the man you mentioned earlier, Michelle, Antoine Rezko. And there are British dimensions to this scandal involving a collaborator of Rezko named Ouchie, a multi-billionaire, who is implicated in a lot of shady activities, but first and foremost is an asset of British intelligence. So LaRouche's view is that Obama will be brought down, can be brought down by scandal. Therefore, the last candidate standing among this troika is Hillary Clinton. Now, the Bill Clinton presidency with the Treasury Secretary Bob Rubin moved back in 1998 towards a revamping of the world financial system, much to the horror of London and Wall Street. And the whole Whitewatergate-Lewinsky scandal was targeted against Clinton to bring him down. There is no way that Hillary Clinton is an acceptable candidate to this crowd, London, Wall Street, personified by George Shultz and Felix Rohatyn. So we're in a situation right now where what appears to be the trajectory of the presidential elections, a two-way race among the Democrats and McCain locked in, from the standpoint of London and Wall Street, they want disruptions, Day of the Jackal type activities. They know that the financial system is going to be crashing through a series of shocks, running simultaneous to the rest of the primaries and into the November elections. And they want Michael Bloomberg, who they've designated as their white knight fascist candidate, to step in. It could be that he becomes the vice presidential running mate of McCain and that shortly after election, McCain steps down for medical reasons. But under any circumstances, this financial oligarchy wants corporativist fascism clearly locked in the White House in January 2009. And for that reason, Hillary Clinton is thoroughly unacceptable. And Obama is probably too soft, even though factions of Wall Street find him potentially acceptable as a stand-in corporativist fascist.
Jeff, let me tell people how to contact us. We're already getting a number of emails in, which I'll go to in a moment. You're listening to a live internet broadcast of the weekly LaRouche Show, the LaRouche Show, which appears on the website of Lyndon LaRouche's magazine, Executive Intelligence Review. And you can contact the LaRouche Movement for information by telephone. The number is 1-800-278-3135. So if you can't get to us right now, keep that number in mind. 1-800-278-3135. Now, the if you want to get to us by email, you can ask a question via email on today's show. That is radio@larouchepub.com. Just put that email address in and you can get your question in. That is radio@larouchepub.com. And some of these questions are very, very relevant to Harley Schlanger, the Western States spokesperson for LaRouche PAC and Mr. LaRouche, who has something to tell us about destroying this Bloomberg option, and also about Bloomberg's soulmate, Arnie Schwarzenegger, who introduced that famous Blackpool speech. First, I'd like to answer a question from an email question, the first one that came in from David. Any chance that a video of Bloomberg's Blackpool speech could end up on YouTube? Well, I certainly hope so, but I can tell you this. We have the audio of his speech and soulmate Arnie Schwarzenegger's introduction, which came from the British Tory Conservative Party's own websites. And I think we will be featuring part of that on the LaRouche Movement website. So with that, let me turn to Harley. We've got some questions I'm going to give you from Robert from Central California. One, we heard that the LaRouche Youth Movement people are planning to expose Bloomberg and Schwarzenazi. Can you talk about this? And secondly, there's a lot of questions here. Is Obama a good guy or a bad guy? What's going on with the Clintons and the orchestrated assault against her campaign? Harley, are you there?
Yes. Let me start with going back to something Spencer brought up on Sinclair Lewis, because he was one of those who warned of the danger of fascism in the early and mid-1930s. And Clifford Odets, a very well-known playwright at the time, said that Lewis and others were actually premature anti-fascists. Now, what he meant by that is that they were being dismissed, their warnings were being dismissed, by people who were actually supporting fascism. And we've mentioned some of this before, the Wall Street and City of London support for Mussolini and Hitler. And, of course, EIR and LaRouche have covered this almost exclusively for years, the Bush family, the Harriman family, and others who were supporting fascism, the New York Times, the Washington Post, who praised Mussolini. Now, these are the same networks that wrote about Arnold Schwarzenegger as a breath of fresh air, someone who speaks his mind, so, you know, a lot of hype. The reality is that Schwarzenegger has been, from the beginning, a controlled asset of George Shultz, whose fingerprints are all over every mistaken policy, every damaging policy going back to the 1960s. And also Felix Rohatyn, who's run the Democratic Party side protection operation and support operation for Schwarzenegger. There's no way Schwarzenegger would have ever been elected governor of California without treachery within the Democratic Party connected to the Kennedy machine. And Lyndon LaRouche has long joked that Arnie Schwarzenegger is the Austrian fascist son that Joe Kennedy always wished he'd had. Now, the key thing on the Schwarzenegger question is that what we talked about over the last couple of days, and I had several discussions with Lyndon LaRouche on this, is that for precisely the reasons that Michelle, Spencer, and Jeff have just outlined, most Americans are unaware that there's an operation from the top being run to put Bloomberg in the White House. Now, of course, the same thing was done with Mussolini. The same thing was done with Hitler. There was nothing inevitable about their rise to power. In both cases, the path was cleared for them by the destruction of the political parties in their countries and support from the leading financial figures both in their own countries, Italy and Germany, but also out of London and to some extent Wall Street. And the same networks, the same families, are involved in this again today. In the case of Rohatyn, his banking company, Lazard Frères, was a leading supporter of the fascist movements in France in the 1930s, and also was involved in the collapse of the French government and the installation of the pro-Nazi Vichy regime. So we, from the beginning, have looked at Schwarzenegger, and instead of seeing some pathetic, buffoonish-type cartoon character, Hollywood steroid-filled figure, we saw someone who was being imposed because they said he had the stomach to push through the fascist policies that Wall Street had decided are necessary for the United States. And so it's from that vantage point that Lyndon LaRouche has been on target in these warnings. He warned that Giuliani was being pushed to the front of the Republican Party only to be brought down. And at the time, Giuliani was number one in the polls on the Republican side. And look how fast he disappeared. So the Schwarzenegger model for Bloomberg is that you create a completely artificial figure who says he's above politics, he's nonpartisan or postpartisan or bipartisan, that he's not caught up in the factional disputes. And from above, he therefore has no one supposedly pulling his strings. He can be an independent operative, which is the biggest fraud there is, because he's the one whose strings are pulled from the beginning by the Schultz, Rowett, and fascist duo.
Harley, let me take a moment to give people some information about how to contact us and a little bit more about the LaRouche movement. You're listening to The LaRouche Show, the weekly Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, internet broadcast radio show. And our guests today are Jeff Steinberg of Executive Intelligence Review, Harley Schlanger, Western State spokesperson for Lyndon LaRouche, and Spencer Cross of the LaRouche Youth Movement out in Seattle, Washington. You can contact the LaRouche Movement by telephone at a toll-free number for information about getting literature, 1-800-278-3135. But most importantly, get the story on this Bloomberg operation from Lyndon LaRouche's own thinking at www.larouchepac.com. It's on the website today. It's called Mitt Romney Walks Out. And people who are interested in organizing, there's a button on the homepage there that is called Organizing Materials, I believe. And you'll get that that leaflet, be able to read it, and so forth. This article will also be appearing in the upcoming issue of Executive Intelligence Review, which is the weekly magazine, EIR magazine. It comes out every single week. It has been publishing without interruption since 1974, and it is the best economics, history, science, and cognitive publication of its kind anywhere in the world. So let's go back to our guests today, and I invite again the audience, please contact us, put in your questions by email, send it to radio@larouchepub.com. Harley, tell us what we're going to do in Texas. That is going to be a very exciting campaign. I understand you have a primary coming up.
Right. Well, what happened is that in the last period, as it's become clear that this Bloomberg option is real, we have to draw the line and make it clear to everyone that the issue is not Obama or Hillary. To go back to this question on Obama, it's an irrelevant question. Nobody really knows enough about Obama at this point. A lot is known about Hillary Clinton. But there's an operation to smash her, smear her and smash her. And at the same time, as Jeff pointed out, Obama is a throwaway. So we're going to turn this on its head. We're going to go after Bloomberg, only we're not going to smear him. We're going to do something even worse. We're going to tell the truth about him, that this is a sleazy billionaire who is committed to imposing Mussolini-style fascist policies from the top down. In Texas, the primary is the next big state primary, also Ohio, the same day as Texas, March 4th. And in both states, we're going to have a beefed-up LaRouche Youth Movement deployment that already is getting out this leaflet that LaRouche wrote on Mitt Romney Walks Out. We got it out this morning at the opening of the Obama campaign headquarters in Houston. And there are a couple hundred people there, and virtually everyone took it. There were people who said to us, this makes sense. I knew they were planning on dumping stuff on Obama. A few other people said, Bloomberg, I need to know more about this. We have Hillary Clinton's coming to town tomorrow where we'll get out this leaflet. The idea is that we're going to saturate among especially young people, but in the urban centers as well, wave after wave of specifically pointed leaflets and pamphlets, which will inform people that there's an operation to destroy the United States at the point of the gravest financial crisis in centuries, to destroy the government of the United States as a mechanism of defending the general welfare, And in the midst of that existential crisis for the nation, they will destroy the Democratic and Republican Party or turn them into vehicles for Bloomberg. And by identifying this operation and getting people to talk about it, we'll probably make Michael Bloomberg disappear.
Well, we had some fun down in Richmond, Virginia, which Jeff was giving me a report on earlier. Jeff, there's a big, huge gathering down there of the Democrats, right?
It's the annual Jefferson Jackson dinner. And, of course, this year it's a special occasion because Virginia also has a primary election coming up very shortly. I think it's in a little over a week. And so both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama will be there. They expect 6,000 people to turn out. And already this afternoon, LaRouche Youth Movement organizers were at a Hillary Clinton campaign rally with over 2,000 people. So we've gotten this Bloomberg leaflet out. And our intention is to preemptively defeat the Bloomberg option before it reaches the point of traction. Mr. LaRouche has a very funny kind of analogy for the approach that the enemy is taking and how we're going to mess up their strategy. He posed the question the other day. He said, well, how do you boil a frog? Obviously, if you've got a pot of really super hot boiling water, you drop the frog in. The frog's going to jump right out. The way you do it is you turn the temperature on very low. You put the frog in the water when the water is lukewarm. And the rate at which the temperature builds up is so gradual and so imperceptible that the frog builds up an immunity until such point that it's too late. So what's going on right now is that the American people are being put through a certain kind of behavior modification process. Look at the media attacks against Hillary Clinton. Look at the media buildup of Barack Obama.
Hey, that was wild. Didn't some newscaster call Hillary a pimp?
Well, this is David Schuster at MSNBC. They were running one of these typical, nasty, cynical media smear jobs on Hillary, and they accused her of, quote, pimping out her daughter Chelsea by virtue of Chelsea cooperating and playing a very important role mobilizing young people around Hillary Clinton's campaign. But now, the same thing is being done with Bloomberg. There is a media campaign going on in various parts of the country, planting the seed that the two-party system is broken beyond repair. Congress is less popular than even President Bush, and that we need somebody above and outside the parties to help us deal with this crisis. The New York Sun, which is a neoconservative newspaper, also associated with the Democratic Leadership Council faction within the Democratic Party, those are the stay-behind Democratic neocons, have been promoting a Bloomberg independent campaign for president for the last 2 years. Bloomberg's major qualification to be the new Mussolini candidate is the fact that, number one, through ill-gotten gains, he is independently wealthy. He's worth, personally, somewhere between $11 and $24 billion. Therefore, he could write out a check for $2 billion to finance his own national presidential campaign. And secondly, Bloomberg's performance as mayor of New York fits the classic corporativist fascist model. He presents himself as a competent manager bringing business methods of organization to city government. He has basically turned the keys to the city over to Felix Rohatyn from the very first day he came into office as mayor in 2001. And in fact, the city has gone through a process of what you could probably call ethnic cleansing. Traditional ethnic neighborhoods, poor areas of the city, have been depopulated by vast reductions in basic services. a furtherance of exactly what Felix Rohatyn did under the Big Mac dictatorship of New York City during the period of the city's bankruptcy in the 1970s. So every step along the way, Bloomberg fits the model of Mussolini's corporativist fascism. Privatization of key government assets.
You mean like schools?
Schools. The New York City school system has been turned over to a number of private so-called charitable foundations. One of them is run by Felix Rohatyn and his wife. The other is run by Bill Gates and his wife. And their idea is to destroy the quality of education. People may not remember, but up through the 1970s, New York City was known to have the finest public education system anywhere in the United States. It was not the rich suburbs that provided excellent education. It was traditional cities with access to museums, concert halls, and an urban population with an outstanding core of teachers and a board of education independent of the politics of the mayor's office. All of that has been destroyed by Bloomberg. And so you have a private, corporativist, internet-driven takeover of the school system. It's a mock for what Bloomberg has done in every other area of city services.
Well, Jeff, we saw the same thing with Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger together on January 19th in Los Angeles, where the two of them, when confronted by Quincy O'Neill, who's a leading member of the LaRouche Youth Movement out in California, and Quincy said, "What do you say when people say this is Mussolini corporatist fascist policy?" And Schwarzenegger didn't even blink. He said, "Call it what you want. We need infrastructure.
Call it what you want. Forgive us for 1776, and we'll forgive you for 1812. I mean, this really is fascism. I want to ask Spencer to elaborate on what he's found out about Mussolini. And also, Spencer, speak up for the LIM, for the LaRouche Youth Movement, because every time I talk to Lyndon LaRouche, he really says that the change in the country, the stopping this fascist plot, really depends on the LaRouche Youth Movement. How's that going to work?
Mm-hmm. Well, mostly with, actually, the first thing is taking up from where Harley mentioned this sort of dictator made of nothing.
Right.
Because that's George Seldes' title for his work on Mussolini's The Sawdust Caesar. Caesar made from nothing.
Huh.
And you see it throughout his whole political career. He was a thug as a child, was involved in several knifings and fights, and put in a monastery that didn't work to reform him, and then ended up dodging the draft to Switzerland for a few years, where he got heavily involved. He got recruited.
Sounds like Bush.
Yeah. He got recruited by a Russian lady who was top in the socialist circles and was in with Alexander Helpand and this whole circle of the British influence in the Soviet system. And he got recruited to the worst ideas of the British as far as existentialism and socialism. And he became a socialist party leader and then was paid off by England and France to change positions as sort of a leader of the party paper. And he ended up calling for intervention into World War I. And after he did this at his paper, he went to the Socialist Party convention. And right when he walked in the door, the whole, you know, 5,000 people shout out, "Chipaga, Chipaga," which is, "Who paid? Who paid?"
Hmm.
You know, "Who paid you to do this, to change directions?" And then you find that he takes the line of being a socialist and, you know, for the common man, but then gets paid off again from the British and from the French and from the industrial leagues in Italy to adopt what becomes the fascist model. And he takes it from this man, D'Annunzio, that we've written some things about. But he always plays, and this is, I think, exactly why LaRouche, Lyndon LaRouche, has been calling this Mussolini the bipartisan option, that he always claims to be above the party structure, that he's the man of principle that will defend justice, or some silly notion of justice. And he sells out every political party to get into power, even though he's, from the get-go, purchased. He's already been purchased at the very onset. So there's more to the story, but that's a lot of it right there. He's just completely bought off. As far as the youth movement, Hold on one second.
Jeff had a question. I think he wanted to.
I'm just curious whether George Seldes, in his account of Mussolini, mentions the role of the Venetian oligarch Volpi di Misurata, who, because my understanding is that what qualified Mussolini was the fact that he was completely beholden to a group of quote-unquote experts who told him exactly what to do, provided him with the script, and he just followed suit. And Volpi di Misurata was a leading Venetian banker oligarch who was in a key position always at Mussolini's side as finance minister of the Mussolini government, and that one of the essentials of corporativism, both then and now, is that you're really looking at a dictatorship on the part of private financial interests that spit on the idea of the general welfare.
Yeah, let me throw in one other thing that that privatization and everything touches on, and I really, really see this talking to people in the field who are now, that is, new people in outreach. They're working instead of 40 hours a week, 22 hours a week, and really having to do the same amount of work in short amount of time. Nazi economics, Shaktian economics, required the successive recycling of labor, burning out labor and lowering the wages, lowering the food intake, etc., all the time. Spencer, you were going to talk about the LaRouche Youth Movement. I know they are taking on a lot of responsibility, like the video on hyperinflation. And so when you tell us all what you guys really do, tell us a little bit about that, too.
Well, I think it's, like, from just what I've been through today on the show, we try and bring, that type of historical perspective to these campuses, primarily, with these young people who, you know, sort of normal, good people, but don't have any connection at all to even American history, a little less, you know, history of Europe or history of world civilization. And they're, like what Harley was saying, when we're giving, like putting out LaRouche's statements, LaRouche's crucial strategic analysis of politics, that it begins to make sense to them, right? Or those reports Jeff was giving us of the responses to the leaflet, they say, "Well, I've never heard of Bloomberg, but this makes sense. I don't really like Obama. I might be voting this way or that way, but this makes sense. This, I can see how this would happen. I can see how they can put this guy Bloomberg in, who I don't know, but there's something about this analysis that I trust."
Michelle, I think if I can just interrupt for a second, there's one thing that's important that even members of our own organization sometimes forget, which is that Lynn has a record over years. And you know, when you put him in a situation where there's a financial crisis, where there's political operations being run, what you usually get is a very thought-through analysis which incorporates several thousand years of human history. And this is fascinating to young people for whom generally the email they just clicked off to their friends is an example of history, you know, with what they just did 2 seconds ago. The idea that we're doing something that will have an effect in the election campaign when everyone else says, well, you're too small, you don't mean anything, or the idea, become part of Obama mania and make a difference. Actually, what we're saying is that the people who are getting swept up in Obama mania are part of this operation. Not that they're wrong for doing it, but that the Obama campaign is a vehicle that's being used to bring down Hillary. And think of what's going to happen as the story of Resco and Obama's connections to this Chicago organized crime operation come out public in terms of demoralizing people. So by bringing up this Bloomberg case and bringing it in and showing people that this is part of a thread in history of how the British operate to use people's emotions and what people think they know to destroy them, to demoralize them. And, of course, that's what was done to our generation with what Jeff was reporting in the early 1960s. The great hopes of the World War II generation was that we would become world historic figures, and instead our generation smoked pot and rolled around in the mud and came out as the baby boomer idiots that are running the country into the ground today.
Well, let's get back to LaRouche, because I think that if Lyndon LaRouche were not on the scene right now with the LaRouche Youth Movement, this fascist plot would have a 100% chance of succeeding. And what we're banking on, and we're and you know, the LaRouche movement is really on a kind of military footing at this point. We have been informed by the LaRouche Political Action Committee that 250,000 copies of this leaflet, Mitt Romney Walks Out, are being produced immediately for mass distribution. So it's not 1,000 here, 1,000 there. 250,000, and I bet they're going to be all out in the population by about Wednesday or within 48 hours of or less of getting in the hands of organizers. But why does the oligarchy fear LaRouche, and what scares the financier oligarchies about the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act? I mean, we saw a ridiculous slander lie from a respectable member of Congress this week, Representative Paul Kanjorski up in Pennsylvania. He made an idiot of himself saying that the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act is a communist plot, we fought communism, we're not going to let the HPBA take over the banks, and he knows better. And something like 60 cities in Pennsylvania, desperate cities where people have been foreclosed upon, have passed a resolution asking Congress to stop the foreclosures, do what Franklin Roosevelt did. So what is LaRouche doing that has the oligarchy so freaked out, Jeff?
Look, if you look at the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, two key elements. Number one, a complete freeze for an indefinite period of time on home foreclosures, with the idea that we're going to allow the entire financial housing bubble to be sorted out. We're going to completely restructure mortgages, property values, and the second key thing is that the entire Federal Reserve banking system is bankrupt. If you got an honest accountant into any bank in the United States, large or small, you would find that those banks are carrying forward massive amounts of non-performing debt and that they're all technically bankrupt. So what LaRouche is also saying is simultaneous to a freeze on foreclosures, you have to use the constitutional authority of the federal government to put the banking system, the Federal Reserve System, through a bankruptcy reorganization, which is exactly what Franklin Roosevelt announced the day he came into office in March of 1933. In fact, within the first 100 days, two of the major pegs of Roosevelt's intervention were, number one, the bank holiday, and number two, the freeze on home foreclosures. So what LaRouche is saying is that the crisis today is far worse. We have a viable precedent for what to do under these circumstances with the way that Roosevelt handled this situation. And what are we up against? We're up against the likes of George Shultz and Felix Rohatyn. We've dealt with Rohatyn, who, for all intents and purposes, is the controller, hands-on, of Mayor Mike Bloomberg of New York City. In the case of George Shultz, it's even worse. George Shultz was the architect of the Bush-Cheney administration. It was at George Shultz's house on the campus of Stanford University in the spring of 1998 that George W. Bush was vetted by this Anglo oligarchy and accepted as the candidate to be rammed into the White House. It was George Shultz who handpicked Dick Cheney as the vice president, who handpicked Don Rumsfeld to be Secretary of Defense. And now this is the George Shultz that runs Schwarzenegger and that also is a leading booster of Bloomberg. Now, George Shultz,
guys have a partnership going way back.
Exactly.
To Chile, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. Let me just say something. For the last 7-8 minutes here, I want to change formats. The three of you really have a lot to say, and let's do it like a roundtable. Try to listen, but just go ahead and pursue these themes among the three of you.
Well, let me just finish up a quick the final word on Schultz, because I think it's essential in terms of understanding the situation. Schultz and Rohatyn, as Michelle just said, teamed up in the early 70s to orchestrate the Pinochet coup in Chile. It was a true corporativist venture in that it was international financial interests that financed under private auspices the Pinochet coup, and then proceeded to create a private international death squad apparatus called Operation Condor. That's the character of Schultz and Rohatyn. And this was done within months after Schultz, inside the Nixon administration, personally, almost single-handedly, brought about the end of Franklin Roosevelt's Bretton Woods system of fixed exchange rates, which is what opened up the door for the kind of financial bubble now leading to the crisis that we're in, a crisis that Schultz and Rohatyn want to solve by putting a fascist in power in the U.S.
Michelle, let me say that the good news for people is that the armor is starting to fall off the governator.
Great.
He's had a series of losses, including one on a proposed private partnership toll road in Southern California. The more that people talk about the reality of these guys, the more evident it is to people that they're being sold a phony bill of goods. That's why getting out the leaflet is so important. The Schwarzenegger-Bloomberg alliance only works if people sit there as victims saying, who's going to help us? You know, the only thing that's going to help you is to organize to get the general welfare reestablished as the basis of U.S. government. Fascism is the destruction of the idea of institutions of self-government in which you have the general welfare as the main focus. That's what FDR did. That's what Rohatyn and Schultz are out to destroy. But they can be beaten.
I'd also like to add LaRouche's remark recently that these oligarchs, they might have, and this is a paraphrase, they might have certain schemes like this Bloomberg option, but they don't have a plan to win. They can't, fundamentally, they can't win because their policies are so destructive. And there was a funny little story with Sinclair Lewis's wife was returning on a boat from Europe and ended up sitting down with Harry Sinclair, the man behind Sinclair Oil, who had a monopoly in Italy, oil monopoly. And with Mr. Giannini, the head of Giannini Bank of Italy, the one that had helped fund Mussolini. And they told Sinclair Lewis's wife that, you know, who you see seated at this table are the men that run the U.S. presidency. And, of course, this is not exactly true, but, you know, we're the ones that buy out campaigns. We run both sides. We hedge our bets, right? And we always win. And this is in 1936. And she said, well, what about Franklin Roosevelt? And they sort of, you know, gulped, and they said, well, there was a slight error there. I mean, we knew he was going to say all this stuff about economic royalists and moneyed interests, but we didn't think he'd actually go through with it.
That's what they fear about LaRouche. There is no doubt in their mind that he will go through with it. And, of course, LaRouche is not running for president, but LaRouche is running the Political Action Committee with the idea that the policy interventions that we are making and the mass outreach that we're conducting into the lower 80% of the population will shape the political environment such that anyone elected president of the United States who is not a complete tool of the oligarchy, a fascist in the footprints of Mussolini or Hitler, just like Bloomberg, anybody who is elected will have no choice but to respond to the will of the people and implement these policies.
Well, this mass effect issue, it means that every single person listening to us, and I know there's many, many people out there who are regular readers of EIR, the website, and so forth, this mass effect means you've got to do some work. I was at an event where Lyndon LaRouche spoke to diplomats and others in Washington, D.C., and he said, there will be no new Hitlers. And, you know, I've known Lyndon since 1972, worked closely with him, and when he says something like that, with that kind of courage, it is a shock and an inspiration. There will be no more Hitlers. There will be no new Hitlers because of what we're going to do to represent the forgotten man, to bring this economy back into the future with hope and science and great creativity through the work of people like Spencer and thousands like him in the LaRouche Youth Movement around the world. And the Mass Effect means you get to call our offices. If you don't know how, call 1-800-278-3135 for more information to be part of this Mass Effect. And we've just about run out of time.
We can also download the leaflet. It's in PDF format on the website, LaRouchePAC.com.
It's right there, www.LaRouchePAC.com. And spread the news about the LaRouche Show. Join us next week, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, again, for another discussion of what we have to do to get through this period. So thank you for joining us, and that is the LaRouche Show for February 9th.